while I spit out my Nicorette gum. Hi, I'm Tina. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is December 31st, 1993, and that is a miracle. My home group is 3333 Tuesday Night Big Book. It has been my home group since I came into Alcoholics Anonymous and stayed. I have a sponsor, Rose, and that I can prove. And I have sponsees, which I'm really, really grateful for. I went to get ready tonight, and you know, when you're going to share, you start thinking, like, what am I going to say? And so I went to put on my makeup, and I saw all these spots on my face, and my nose is peeling off, and I thought, this is like the summation of my addictions. Like, the way I suntan is the way I did everything all of my life. I cannot get enough. And I did this all last week. I had vacation, and I laid on the beach, and I kept thinking, I need more, and I need more, and I'm not dark enough, and I wouldn't go in, and I, you know, it's crazy. It's craziness. And now, like, my face is spotted, and I'm paying the consequences. But it was worth it. Okay, well, I don't remember my first drink. I know that I hated alcohol, and I was really afraid of it. My mother was an alcoholic, and I was not going to be a drunk. It pretty much hurt me and the family for a lot of years. So I can tell you the first memory of alcohol was drinking Boone's Farm apple wine in an alleyway in Brooklyn, New York. And most of you don't even know about Boone's Farm apple wine, but it was around, and it was pretty disgusting, and you know, we passed it one to the other, and I remember thinking, ooh, I don't like this, but I did it anyway, and I don't remember wanting more, you know, that night. I do know that I was always, always a restless, irritable, discontent, crazy kid. You know, I started out life like that. And you know, my parents would say, like, what is wrong with her? You know, she can never sit still. She, you know, so. And I've been like that most of my life until I worked the steps, and it didn't go away right away. actually, it's taken a lot of years in Alcoholics Anonymous for that to really go away. But so I don't remember drinking because of that, and I don't remember drinking because I didn't fit in or all the stories I hear around here. But I know that whenever, except for that first drink, that whenever I put anything in me, I wanted more. If it made me feel good, and I could stay awake and keep going, I wanted more. So most of my story is about other substances, or at least I thought that. And I thought for a long time that I was not an alcoholic. In fact, after my first treatment stint, I went out and drank because I was convinced I was not an alcoholic, and we all know how that works. But anyway, you know, I went through Catholic schools, and I went through Catholic high school, and meeting up with the girls at the water fountain in the morning, and it was like whatever the pill of the day was, and everybody, like, take one. You know, and that's how I got through classes, you know. And I did that for a couple of years. But I started to realize that of all my friends, I always was like, okay, what's next? Where are we going next? What's the next, you know. You know, but at that time in high school, I think I could still control it. Like, you know, it was not a problem. Except for senior year, when And I didn't know this then. I know it now because I've worked hard at finding out the truth about myself. But I was like 6 months away from graduation, and, you know, I wasn't going to school. There was more fun outside of school, you know. And so I wouldn't show up, and I think that was the first time I really ever lied about what I was doing, why I wasn't doing school, because I never really got in trouble. I was really good at living a double life for a long time. But my mom had gotten cancer, and so I told the nuns, and they were perfect because, you know, they would fall for this, that, you know, my mom is really sick, and, you know, I haven't been able to do any of my work, and you really need to give me makeup work. And that's how I got out of high school. They all fell for it and gave me makeup work. So I graduated, like, by the skin of my teeth. But most of my life, I couldn't wait. Like, I always wanted to be ahead of myself. So, you know, when I was 16, I couldn't wait to be 18. And when I was 18, 21 is it. And that's what it's going to happen for me. And so at 18, I'm not going to college. You know, that's for stupid people. I know, and this is really how I thought, which, you know, is insane. But that's for people that just, you know, can't live life out there. They sit in a classroom. So I went to work. And that's really when I did a lot of drinking. And that was in the days when, well, I don't know, maybe it still goes on. In New York City, there's a lot of, like, liquid lunch. You go out and you do your liquid lunch. And so that's what I did at lunchtime. And I was really proud of myself because I was excelling at work, and I was drinking like one of the boys. And I've always had this ability to kind of be in control, or think I'm in control, which is all part of my craziness. And I've always tried to control everything around me. So and a lot of people fell for that, and I really, like, tore through people's lives. And I'm not going to do, like, a fifth step here, but I've really done some crazy things. Anyway, so I drank an awful lot in my early 20s, and I met this guy. Actually, I met him when I was like 17, and we dated for probably 6-7 years, and he was a real alcoholic, and he drank every single day, and I despised that. I was like, oh my God, how could you do that? But when I was like 20, 21, I tried cocaine for the first time, and I'm sorry, but drugs are a part of my story, and I loved it because now I can go 24 hours a day. And for some reason, I don't want to sleep. I've never wanted to sleep. And my mother told me that even as a kid, I just never wanted to sleep. So this worked. I could just stay up, and the party would never end. But I'm dating this drunk, and he drinks every night, 6-pack of beer, and it's like, you know, craziness. But I don't know how to end relationships because I don't do relationships right. I never have. So if I think I love you, you're my possession, and you're done, you know. I'm just going to abuse the hell out of you, and I don't mean to do that stuff. I think that's what relationships are about. You know, this is how I saw my mom and dad. So I think, okay, this is what you do. You're miserable together. You know, you yell, you scream, you fight, but you stay together. And so we're dating for like till, I don't know, I was about 22, 23. And I say, hey, you know, we've tried everything. We've broken up 15 times, got back together. We're getting married. And he says... And I'm like, no, we get married. And so it's kind of, I've proposed to a few people in my life. But so we get married. And And at the back of the church, the day I was getting married, my dad, God bless him, he loves me in spite of me. I'm ready to walk into the church, and he says, "Sweetheart, if you don't want to do this, we don't have to." And it was like, well, he knows. Because really, this was one of the biggest mistakes of my life, and I kind of knew that, but I was all out of options. You know? He didn't change, we didn't, you know, so I have to marry him, and then I've tried everything, and if that fails, then that's it. Then I can walk away. And it truly is a testament to how I drank and drugged, because I had to try everything known to man before I could surrender. But I really didn't know what was to be coming in my future. Anyway, after about a year of complete and utter torture on both of our parts, I packed a bag and I said, well, I'm going to Miami for a week and I'm going to sort things out. And, you know. And all this time, I think, like, I'm drinking a lot more at him, you know. Oh, I'll show you. And so I'd drink, and he'd drink, and I'd do other things, and he wouldn't, and he'd point fingers. And so I thought, okay, I'm going to Miami. Miami will be good. And then I'll stop all the craziness and make a good decision with my life, because nothing was working. Now, if you like cocaine and you move to Miami in 1983, you're dead. It just was like, that life almost killed me. But it helped because I got my divorce while I was in Miami, and I never had to go home and do this. And this is how I ended that relationship. I later found out, which was only a couple of months ago, while I was trying to get an annulment from him, well, I have actually gotten my annulment, that I walked out on him on Christmas Eve. Now, if you asked me the story, I told you a different story, and I said that I filed for divorce because I was just over him. Well, the truth is, he filed for divorce for abandonment. And I didn't know that for 23, 4, 8 years. I don't even remember. I just found that out this year. So all this stuff, you know, like more will be revealed. It just keeps coming. Anyway, I went to Miami and I really heavily got into that other alcohol. And about a year into living in Miami, my mom had taken really a bad turn. And this is part of, like, a lot of my guilt and my shame, because I was not able to be a good daughter. Drinking was... Oh, my. Oh. And so I went back home when she was near death, and I didn't get to spend much time with her. So I lost my mother when I was like 25. And for a long time, I had a lot of things confused in my mind. I thought I was an alcoholic because my mother was an alcoholic, and that is so not the truth. And I thought that all this happened to me, you know, the divorce, my mother dying, that is so not the truth. But I couldn't see any of that because I was full of self-centered, you know, self-pity stuff. But I went on with my life telling myself this story, and I have a lot of stories. My sponsor always says, okay, what story are you telling yourself today? And we have to review my story to see if it's true or not. Well, I kind of crashed and burned like 10 months after she died, and I mean like really hard. really hard. But before I did, I met my next soon-to-be husband, who would become the father of my children. And I was on like a three-day bender with him. And just to give you a little info, he was a dentist, so that was good for me. Because, you know, he could write all those scripts. And then I had like a candy store. And I also told him he was marrying me. I met him, and then I quickly like spiraled, and I wound up in my first treatment center, and that was in 1983. I'm really dating myself. And I spent 30 days there, and in my first 5 days, I had a grand mal seizure, and I almost had heart failure. And it was because I failed to tell them that I was taking all those benzos, because cocaine was my problem. So I didn't tell them. And I almost died. And you know, I walked out of there thinking, okay, hey, I'm done with this stuff. I'm going to just drink. You know, how much trouble can I get into? So that's what I did. And I come from an Italian family. So, I mean, real Italian. We're not just like third generation. We're the real deal. So we drink wine at dinner. And, you know, everybody drinks at dinner. And so I would go out with my family because it was shortly after my mom died. And we were all really close. So we would spend a lot of time together. And I told them I could drink. And they kind of thought, okay. So I knew I had a problem when they would leave their glasses, and as they all left the table, I'd be, you know, finishing theirs. And one night I thought, wow, this is really strange. I never liked alcohol. Why am I doing this? But I always had a story to tell myself, like, oh, it was because that particular drink was very tasty, or I was really thirsty, or whatever. And so I did that for a while. Quick to the chase here, I really did, I dated this dentist, and we had the same exact scenario, okay? Fighting all the time. And the fighting is really because I want to mold you into the person I want instead of accepting the person you are. So that's what I do. They did. I don't do that anymore. But so same scenario, and I kind of gave him an ultimatum. We either get married or you're done. You know. So he came into the rooms years later because he is one of us, and he said, I didn't even know what shoe size I wore for years because I would go pick out his clothes because I'm such a crazy person. But anyway, and that wasn't the truth. He was lying. But anyway, I married that guy, and we spent 10 years from when I was 29, not even 10, 29 to 37, and it was, I was trying to think before, my life was so chaotic that if I try to think about it, it's like a movie moving so fast that I can't stop any scenario. It just won't stop. But I can tell you a few snippets, because I was a daily user by then, and I had gone on to, back up. All I ever wanted to do was be married and have children. That was kind of like my thing in life. Nothing, at least I thought that's all I ever wanted. And I after a lot of therapy, and I've had a lot of therapy, I found out that it was kind of like I'm trying to redo my childhood and get it right. And how I thought I would redo that is be the mother that I always wanted and treat the kids the way I always wanted to be treated and have the marriage that I always thought my mom and dad should have. But I kept picking the wrong person. So I got pregnant right away. And it was like the best day of my life. Aside from the other two best days, when I had the other two. But I have to be fair, in case they're listening. they don't. You can't let your kids think you have favorites. It just doesn't work. Now I was thoroughly convinced that this is it. When I get pregnant, I'm done, because that is the most important thing, more important than my own life. But you know how that goes. So, by the time I got pregnant, I had been drinking once a week. I was smoking cigarettes like a chimney. And those two things were okay, because what I said was, well, mom smoked and drank with you. You're okay. Look at you. Look at you. And I believe that shit. You're okay. But then I was not only doing cocaine, but now I was smoking it. And so I managed to do that three times a week. And this was the biggest secret of my life. Except for from that guy that I was married to. And every day I had to justify this, because every single day I woke up saying, you're not going to do it today. And every single night I failed, and miserably. And so for 8 months, because I only carried that kid for 8 months, I lived in terror. And when I read the book, years later, I know what that terror is. That it was terror. The night I gave birth to my son, who is 25 years old and an okay guy, I was high, and I was so paranoid, because it was in the 80s, and it was when babies were being taken away from their mothers in the hospitals right out of their hands, and he wasn't, and he wasn't having any visible signs of being addicted, but I laid in that hospital bed praying to God and asking God for forgiveness and making promises that when I go home, it's done. That wasn't going to happen until I had my second child 2 years later. Same scenario. I kind of like to do things over and over, and I don't get the freaking, you know, message. I do it again. And only this time it had progressed, like all of us progress. I don't even remember. I wound up in I'm getting a little confused because I'm getting emotional. But anyway, I had my second child, a daughter, and I really, really tried hard to control all of this. And I wish I could say that I did, but I didn't. And so she was born. She was pretty hyper, and I kind of know that that's a part that's kind of the consequence, but she's okay too. I at this time, it is crazy in my household. Okay, I'm married to this dentist, We've got these two practices going that are really doing well. We live in a really nice house in the burbs, and I've, you know, toting the kids around. But at night, the things that are going on in my home are just unbelievable. And so I would stay up all night, get up and try to fit in, taking care of my babies. And at that time in my life, I would look at them and I would know, oh my God, I love you, but I don't feel that. And I know I'm supposed to be caring for you, but I can't. I just can't, because I'm obsessed with, when am I gonna get another drink? So I did a lot of pretend for a long time, and then the almost the end came when I got pregnant with my third child. And mind you, I am this insane that each time I believed that, and each one of my children were planned. They were not accidents. They weren't any oops, I did it. And I was convinced that I'm stopping. You watch me. And I didn't. But anyway, my third child, who is currently 19, was born pretty maturely. I was not quite 7 months, and I almost lost her. And I was pretty much in danger as well for 5 days in the hospital. And she had to stay for a while. And then by the time she was about a year old, I had, like, the whole family come down on me. You know, like, I was able to hide it enough, but by the time I had my third, I was probably about 100 pounds soaking wet. I was actually starting to wear 2 layers of clothes, and in New York you can do that in the winter, but in the summer it's kind of hard. So, and I was able to hide it, but they caught on, and so I like what Eric said. I used to get thrown into treatment centers. Like, I wake up in the waiting room of a treatment center because my family just, like, said, okay, that's it, we had enough of you, and they chase me around the house and throw me in the car and stick Valium in my mouth so that I would quiet down, and then they'd leave me at a treatment center. And I woke up at 2 treatment centers like this, and one of them was Daytop in New York City, New York State, in the mountains, and it was like, this, I don't know if you guys ever heard of Daytop, but it's like military, and they scream in your face, and like, now, I am not a rule follower. I'm like, I want to do things my way, and if you don't do it my way, we're not having it. And so for 5 days in that treatment center, I wouldn't go up to the bathroom. Well, I would have to go, but I wouldn't, because I'd have to ask permission, and I'm like, I have 3 kids, I'm a mom, and I have to ask you for permission. It was like a peer. And so they had to, like, literally break me down. And, you know, it's the ego and arrogance that I have that is unbelievable, okay? I have 3 babies at home. I can't stop using to save my life. I don't deserve them, and I'm, like, not going to ask permission to go to the bathroom because I think I'm all that, or I don't know what I thought. But that's who I am, and that's how I was. So anyway, that wouldn't be my last treatment. I spent 3 months there. I went back home to the husband, who was also my partner in crime, and it took about 8 hours. You know, I've known for years, I knew. I've wrecked cars, fell asleep driving, you know, almost killed myself, could have killed people. I knew I was an addict and alcoholic. I knew it. But I just would not admit that I am powerless. It's like, you're not getting me to say I'm powerless. I'm going to keep on trying it my way. And they're very different things to me. You know, I used to think that that's what this first step was about, is saying I'm an alcoholic. That's not it. That's not it. I'm powerless. I'm powerless without help, and I will keep doing the same thing over and over again. So I went and I spent my baby's first birthday in treatment and her second birthday in treatment. And by then, her brother was 6 and her sister was 4, and where's mommy? I wasn't there. I had my first spiritual awakening or experience, not an awakening. It took years for that. I had my first spiritual experience in a treatment center in upstate New York. It was my 4th. And I went there for 30 days. And the woman who was my therapist said, "You need long-term treatment." And I said, "Okay." And I heard myself go, "Okay." And I don't say, "Okay," because I'm not one, I don't do that. And I know today that that was a spiritual experience because nobody else but God put those words in my mouth. I had never been willing before to do it. So they sent me, they gave me a choice, go to New Jersey or go to Tampa, Florida. And I was like, New Jersey? I never heard of Tampa, Florida. And this was like in 1993. And I really had never heard of Tampa, Florida. Miami, Fort Lauderdale, you know. And then I said to the woman, "Well, wait a minute. New Jersey's really close to Staten Island. And that's where I live. And I don't trust myself to go to New Jersey because, you know, because I don't trust myself. So I think I'll go to Tampa, Florida." And I liked that, you know, they had said they had a swimming pool and I could go to the beach and, you know. So I came to Tampa, Florida. And I wound up in Turning Point of Tampa. And they told me I was going to spend 2 months there. And I had already spent a month up north. And then I'd be good. And so I came here for 2 months. And at the six-month mark, they said, "Okay, you can go now." So I spent 6 months in treatment. And while I was in the treatment center, I learned some things about myself. But the main thing that I got was they brought me to AA. I had never gone to AA. Well, I did once or twice, but by myself. No other treatment center. They would have speakers maybe once or twice. But here, you had to go, and you had to get a sponsor, and you had to do. So I did it. And I also tried to help others for the very first time in my life, ever. I never tried to talk to anybody about this deal, about what it was like for you or what it's like for me. I didn't want to hear what it was like for you. I thought I was different. I didn't care about you. You were all different. And at this time, we helped each other. And I swear to God that that made a huge difference. And so at 5.5 months in Turning Point, I really got scared to death to go home, which was always the plan. I was going to go home and be a mom and go back to that house and stay married and, you know, happily ever after. And I knew. And that was my second, I think, spiritual experience that for some reason I had some clarity. And that wasn't from me. That was God. And so I made a decision to stay here for a year, and when I was good to go, I'd go home, and that has not happened yet. I hope it never does, but this is home for me. I want to just tell you a little bit about what it is like today. I got divorced in my first year of recovery. It was the very best thing that I could have done for all of us, me, my kids, their dad. At the time, it felt like the worst thing. I felt like a failure. The kids hated me. It was like, you know, your life is a mess. I thank God that I did these things for recovery, because I can't imagine being married today to that person, and I'm sure he can't imagine being married to me. So it was a gift. My dad got really sick 5 years ago, and before I go there, because I got divorced, I had to go to work, and since I had never gone to college because I was too busy drinking, my divorce agreement gave me an opportunity to take a couple of years, get a degree, so that I could support my children. And so I went to school, and this was another spiritual experience. Somebody told me in these rooms, she just happened to be next to me, and I have never seen her since. She happened to be sitting next to me in the financial aid office at HCC, where I started taking classes, and we started chit-chatting. And I told her my circumstances. And she mentioned something like Bill W., and I was like, oh, well, I know Bill W., and chit-chatting. And then she said to me, oh, you're a divorced mom. You need to go over here, and gave me an address, and they'll do testing. And so I did. I finally learned how to follow directions. And I went over there, and they did testing, and they told me I'd be good in human services. And if you go to HCC for 2 years in the human services program, we're going to pay for everything, even child care. And I was like, great, I'm going. And that's what I did. And when I was in that course, my professor said, you're really good at this. You have to get your bachelor's. And I graduated top of my class because I actually did the work. And it was the first time in my life that I didn't, manipulate anything. And so I went to weekend school so I could work full-time and go to school while I was sober. And then I thought, hell, I'm just getting my master's. I mean, why not? But while I was in my bachelor's program, I was working as a house manager at Turning Point of Tampa because I needed extra money, and they gave me a job. And when I finished, midway through my master's, this clinical director at Turning Point asked me if I would be a therapist there. And I thought, oh, my God, this doesn't happen. I was a client there, and now I'm going to be a therapist? Go figure. But I am, and I'm a therapist there. And that's amazing. And so that's kind of like divinely inspired, because I didn't make those decisions. My dad got sick about 5 years ago, and I never get through this without crying, but oh well. He got cancer, and at the time, I quit my job because I was really pissed off, and I was tired, and I was working so hard, and AA was not top of my list. And so I quit my job, and then found out that he was not going to live. And so I got to spend all this time with him, and be the daughter that I should have been. And I think I did a good job. I was with him the night he died. And one of the last things he said to me, we were sitting on the back patio, and it was the last real conversation we had, and he said, I think I had 12 years then, he said, can I ask you something? I said, sure, what? He said, have you really not taken anything in all these years? And I said, no, I really haven't. He said, not a drink, nothing? And I said, nope. And he said, good Dolly, that's what he always called me, good Dolly, I don't ever have to worry about you anymore. And to me, that was like the greatest gift I could give that man. And for that, I owe Alcoholics Anonymous, the fellowship and God. Thank you.